Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. As part of his budget plan, Governor Phil Scott is proposing to use $210 million in federal COVID economic stimulus money for a variety of one-time projects in Vermont, including funds for housing initiatives, weatherization, broadband expansion, and investments in information technology. The governor is making it very clear to lawmakers that he doesn't want them to use any of this one-time money for ongoing programs in state government.
If we're cautious, we can solve problems and fund projects that have been stalled for years. However, if we don't learn from past mistakes and choose to use one-time money to create ongoing obligations that we can't afford in the future, we'll be forced to increase the burden on working Vermonters.
It's also likely that the state of Vermont will receive considerably more federal COVID funds in the next major federal stimulus package. Should these funds be used for one-time projects as well? Well, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with the Democratic leaders at the State House, and today we're going to hear from the Republicans and the Progressives about their legislative priorities for the 2021 session. And in the first part of the program, we're going to talk to the Republican leaders, and joining us at this time, House Minority Leader Patty McCoy, who represents Pulteney in the Vermont House, and Senate Minority Leader Randy Brock, who represents Franklin County. Great to have you both on the program today.
Thank you.
Representative McCoy, what do you think should be the central focus of the 2021 session?
Economic recovery. I think first and foremost, we have to really be laser focused on that. We really need to get Vermonters back to work and address the needs of all individual Vermonters. And I want to stress businesses as well, because if businesses, we really have to help businesses out. If they fold, then individuals don't have jobs, and it's just this massive cycle that we're just going to go round and round.
And specifically, how do you do that? How do you help individuals and businesses through this economic recovery? Are there certain state programs that you'd like to see put into place?
Well, you just mentioned the $210 million one-time funding for economic recovery. It's not to say that we can lift up businesses for years to come, but to keep them in business and prop them up a bit for, you know, the next, you know, 6 to 12 months of business, I believe that's what that money should be used for. And I think the governor outlined in his budget address where he would like to see monies go, and a lot of it was for investment in housing and broadband and the like, which are businesses in our state that actually do these types of things. So, yes.
And just a reminder of the governor's list, he had $16 million for housing, $20 million for broadband, $53 million of this $210 million from the federal stimulus money, $53 million for information technology, $25 million for environmental brownfields. He did have $20 million in sort of a bridge grant to the Vermont State College System, also $25 million for weatherization programs, and $10 million for solar programs. All one-time investments that the governor says should be made. Senator Brock, what do you see as the key priorities for lawmakers this session?
Well, I think the priorities were outlined to some extent by the governor in his budget address. One of them underlying it is to do no damage. One of the things we should have learned from many years of receiving federal funds is that if we take those federal funds to stand up new programs, the federal government walks away in 1 to 2 years, leaving us with a large amount that we have to continue funding and with no real source of doing it. That's why it's so important that we focus this additional federal largesse that we're receiving on one-time programs in which we can make a difference, but it also will position us better to be able to live within our means in the future. Of those
and
things
Senator,
are really important, at least at the top of my list right now, is something that we certainly learned from the pandemic, and that is telecommunications. That's broadband. That's cellular connectivity. And those one-time funds, we have a tremendous opportunity now to avoid creating two Vermonts, which we're beginning to do, the Vermont that's connected and the Vermont that's not.
And do you have thoughts, Senator Brock, on the plan and the approach that should be used to bring broadband to Vermont? Because it, as we just heard in the newscast before the program, there seem to be some competing ideas.
There certainly are competing ideas, and competing ideas are not necessarily bad because in the vetting process, we hopefully come up with the best idea. We have a landscape right now that consists of legacy carriers as well as new entrants, and among the new entrants are the Communications Union districts, of which we have nine in Vermont, focused on bringing broadband, particularly to rural areas, areas where people don't have it right now. There are also new technologies such as the satellite technology that's recently been introduced, and that's showing great promise. So we have to do, I think, a number of things, and we have to coordinate it. And the key to doing that is to create an organization that oversees broadband in Vermont and that welds together or stitches together all of these things in a way that works. And that's a reconstitution that we're working on in the Senate of the old Vermont Telecommunications Authority.
Representative McCoy, I think there are twice as many Democrats in the House as there are Republicans. You did pick up some seats in the recent election. It really means that the Democrats as a majority can pass legislation with little or no Republican support. So what do you see as the role of the Republican House caucus? How does your caucus have an influence on the legislative process?
Well, as I've said before, you know, we can do most of our work in committees, and in committees is where the majority of the work is done. So I've always told our members that they need to speak up and question when there is a draft bill before their committee to try to flesh out what they may not like about the bill and try to massage and change it while it's in the committee. So committee work really is where we really should be focusing most of our energies on. When it gets to the floor, you know, pretty much, you know, we might be able to sway one or two, but, you know, there's 46 of us in the House, so that's far from, you know, the 76 that you would need to pass a bill. So, yeah.
Today in the program, we're talking to House Minority Leader Patty McCoy and also the Senate Leader Randy Brock. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Mike, who is calling from Middlebury. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Bob, my question is if the state should use some of this one-time stimulus money to honor its obligation to the pension system and level off the state and teacher pension funds. Is that an acceptable use and a conversation that's going on right now?
Senator Brock, let's see if we could get our first answer from you. Just as a little bit of background, I think State Treasurer Pierce says there's an additional $600 million unfunded liability in these pension funds. What about Mike's question? Should some of this one-time money be used there, or is there a different solution?
Well, that's one of the things that's under discussion, along with lots of other things right now. That is something that's being talked about as to, A, if it's permissible under the federal law, and secondly, whether or not it makes sense. Clearly, we do need to make a substantial investment in the funds right now. It's the $600 million that you refer to, that's the amount that it increased just in the past year, and that's absolutely huge. Our actual unfunded liability, though, from both state employee and teachers' retirements, as well as the so-called OPEB, or the other post-employment benefits, largely health care for both groups, now totals a whopping $5.747 billion. That's $5.7 billion. And for it to go up to the rate that it has, just keeping it going the way it is right now, we're spending about $200 million a year, and it'll be $270 million within the next couple of years. Those are huge numbers, and they outpace what we spend on protection, what we spend on higher education, what we spend on a lot of things. The pension systems right now are unsustainable as we are doing them, and that's the discussion that we're having, as to say, what are the alternatives that we need, and how can we get there to protect the teachers and to protect the state employees who've devoted a lot of their lives to the state, but at the same time prevent the state from going bankrupt. And that discussion is actively being held between the treasurer and the various unions representing employees, and the administration is there, as is the legislature. So we're all involved in these discussions. And these discussions cannot take forever, because we can't continue to increase at the rate we are without a solution. So this can't be kicked down the road further.
Senator Brock, would some of those solutions include changing the benefit package for those teachers and state employees who are still working?
Well, that's one of the items that's under discussion. Needless to say, teachers and state employees are not at all in favor of doing that. They're looking at other revenue sources as a solution. And as these negotiations continue, I can't tell you what the end result will be, but I do know that everybody who's working on this, including certainly those of us in the General Assembly, are trying to come up with solutions that are innovative, that are effective, and that protect all of the various folks who are involved in this process, especially those who are retired or who are retiring.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Graham in Richmond. Hi, Graham. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's a terrific program. My thought is that the governor is spot on with regard to spending the money and not spend it on something that could possibly set us up for a bigger tax burden, et cetera, down the road. In other words, spend it on one-time projects, so to speak. But the other thought is, too, how long until we would know, yes or no, whether or not we are getting more money from the federal funds? And could we possibly wait to decide what to do with the current money until we know whether we're getting more?
All right, Graham, thanks for your phone call. Representative McCoy, it's probably a little hard to guess what's going to happen in Congress, but it does seem that in the next 4 to 6 weeks that both the House and the Senate down there are going to pass something close to President Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus package. It's estimated that would bring just under $100 million to the state of Vermont. It would bring about $1 billion to the state of Vermont. The state itself would get about $600 million, and local cities and towns would get about $300 million. To Graham's question, does it make sense to put some of that money in the bank, so to speak, and see what are some of the most effective ways to spend it?
Well, I believe our House appropriations, the money bills usually, just for those listening, the money bills usually start on the House side, and then once we pass them out, they go over to the Senate to get massaged or changed. I believe our House appropriations will be voting out sort of a mini budget bill tomorrow, which is based on this one-time money. The issue, I think, for most of us in the House is we really want to get this money out to Vermonters now. We have it, and they need it. Let's get it out to them now. And as you said, if in fact the $1.9 trillion federal dollars is realized, then we can deal with the possible $1 billion the state of Vermont will be receiving when we receive it. Because if it's not until April or if it's not until May, that's yet another 3 months that we could have used this money to do good for Vermonters now. I know there's a business package in this mini bill of $10 million to get out to businesses now that are in need of it. So I would not be in favor of waiting until the next round of monies do come.
Senator Brock, we got an email from Seth who wonders if the legislature will bring more money into the state by legalizing sports betting. So I actually have to like to expand that a little bit. Sports betting is one way to bring more revenue into the state through gambling. And the governor also proposed these Keno machines in bars around the state. What are your thoughts about increasing betting in Vermont?
Well, I think that as we look around our neighboring states, that's something that's happening. This is a discussion that right now is being held in the Senate Economic Development Committee. And the feeling within the committee is largely thus far in favor of adding sports betting. It is, at this stage, not in favor of Keno. But we'll have to see how the rest of those discussions go on. One of the things, of course, that you always worry about is whether or not addictive gambling and harm to people who gamble may result from this. But this is personal behavior that, as we see, is already going on in terms of folks going online and betting with organizations outside of the state and indeed outside of the country.
So, Senator Brock, you mentioned that sports betting seems to be pretty well received within the Senate Economic Development Committee, but Keno is not. Can you explain to us why there's a difference of opinion on those two issues?
No, frankly, I can't. They are identical. They are very, very similar. Sports betting is perhaps a little bit more distant, and it's a bit more accepted, I think, because of the history of doing sports betting both privately and online, where that's not the case with Keno. Keno is much more, I think, in people's minds, similar to casino gambling, which is not something that's particularly favored here in Vermont.
Representative McCoy, what about increasing things like sports betting? How do you feel about that? How do you think your caucus feels about it?
Well, I live 400 yards from the New York State border. So, you know, anyone on this western part of the state can just drive over the border and place a bet. I mean, there's off-track betting there. It's legal in New York. So I am in favor of it. You know, I'd rather have the money stay in the hands, of the state of Vermont rather than driving across the border.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Tyler, who's calling from Montpelier. Hi, Tyler. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I finally got through. So my this is a very, very interesting conversation, but I think that one of the utmost legislative priorities is tackling the motel voucher program for the homeless, for individuals and families in the state, and creating, although the governor talks about affordable housing, those who are intimately involved with the social services throughout Vermont are seeing that people are being radically underserved by the motel voucher program. They've essentially created a gulag state where folks who are in desperate need of services are being deprived of them. So we can talk about internet and we can talk about infrastructure, but we should talk about people and the people who need help the most from the state.
Tyler, thanks for your phone call. Representative McCoy, your thoughts about the homeless motel voucher program?
Well, you know, I know that we've used them in need when there is a need, when the temperature falls below a certain amount for homeless and the needs of homeless. And I'm not going to say that, you know, it's a great program. It is a kind of a safety net because we don't have affordable housing for individuals. And I think that's why the governor is kind of highlighting that in his budget to try to put more money into that and put one-time money into that, because that's where I think the one-time money would do a real you know, a great service to the Vermonters who are in need. The governor says over and over to protect the most vulnerable. These are our most vulnerable individuals. So for us to put money into the affordable housing is one way of getting rid of that motel voucher system. Not to say that it will always go away, because there will be homeless that choose to be homeless for whatever reason. We see it every winter in the cities throughout our state. And motels are a good place to keep them when the temperature goes really low. But the governor does have money in that. I know our Human Service Committee is working on affordable housing bills right now. So I think we're trying to get there. It's a slow crawl sometimes, but we're trying.
I'd like to ask both of you about the future of the Republican Party. Will it continue to be the party of former President Donald Trump, or will it be represented by a more moderate group? Governor Phil Scott didn't vote for Donald Trump in 2016 or 2020, and recently the governor said he would support impeaching and convicting Trump for his actions leading up to the insurrection at the Capitol building on January 6th. Scott says he wants to stay a member of the Republican Party, but this could be difficult for him if the Trump wing of the party is the dominant group.
Whether indeed they believe this is a party of Trump, whether they're if they're going to continue with some of what I perceive as white supremacy dominating, racial inequity, and so forth, then we'll all have to make some decisions.
Senator Brock, what role would you like to see former President Trump play in the future of the Republican Party?
Well, he's obviously a member of the party. I do not expect to see him play the kind of role that he has in the past. The Republican Party is a diverse party. And that's particularly true in Vermont. The Vermont Republican Party has a long history of showing its own independence relative to the national party. And we have a history that somewhat parallels what we're seeing right now. If you remember back in the 1950s, we had the issue of Joe McCarthy, who was a Republican, and the red baiting that went on then. And it took Vermont Republicans, senators who represented Vermont, were the ones who were at the forefront of ending that kind of activity, that kind of problem that took the Republican Party somewhat off the rails, and to bring it back to the center. We have a large party. We have a party that brings in people who have different views and different perspectives, and I think we should continue to do that.
Representative McCoy, what are your thoughts?
I would agree mainly with Randy. We are a diverse party. We listen to and hear all sides. I think that, you know, I'll paraphrase Governor Douglas when he said, you know, I've been a Republican for, you know, and pardon me, Governor Douglas, for 70-some-odd years or whatever he quoted. And I haven't been one quite that long, but he said, you know, Trump's been one for what, 4 years, 5 years? So, you know, he supported Bill Clinton, you know, he was a Democrat, you know, and he's just been a Republican the last several years. So, you know, this Republican Party is a different animal than the National Party. I've always felt it has been. We're pretty inclusive of all individuals. So I think we'll come out of this stronger than before, prior to Trump.
We've been listening to the Republican leaders at the State House, talking to House Minority Leader Patty McCoy and also Senate Minority Leader Randy Brock. Many thanks to both of you for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're We're going to continue our discussion now with the leaders of the Progressive Party. Vermont's Progressive Party is one of the most successful third parties in all of the country. Over the years, it's elected a statewide officer, Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman. It's also elected a group of about a half dozen members of both the House and the Senate. For a time, many of these officials came from Chittenden County, but in recent years, progressive lawmakers have been elected from some of Vermont's most rural communities. And joining us right now to discuss the Progressive Party priorities at the State House this session are House Caucus Leader Celine Colburn, who represents Burlington in the Vermont House, and Senate Caucus Leader Anthony Polina, who represents Washington County. I'd like to welcome both of you to the program today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start off with both of you, as we did with the Republicans, and get a sense of your legislative agenda. Representative Colburn, what do you see as the top priorities for the House Progressive Caucus this year?
We have done a lot of thinking and talking about this, and we are really looking, like everyone, at COVID-19 recovery and what that looks like. I think where the emphasis of our work may be different from some others is that we have a laser focus on equity. It's very, very clear, over the last year that the pandemic has widened existing inequities, economic inequities, gender-based inequities, racial inequities, and on and on. And we believe firmly in the House Progressive Caucus that a true COVID response is going to not just respond in the moment with aid that might be needed, and of course that is very important, but is actually going to do long-standing work to address the underlying structural issues that contribute to these inequities. So where you may hear some folks this year saying we need to move slowly, we need to just really focus on getting the aid out there, we have a strong belief that we need to be looking at how to address injustice and economic injustice, racial injustice is at the heart of a lot of the work that my colleagues and I are bringing forward solutions to address these issues.
And what would be some very specific examples of that kind of legislation? What would it address?
Sure. I have many, many examples, but economic injustice, we know, has widened in Vermont and across the country. So we've seen, the top 1%, the top 2% doing better during the pandemic. We've seen sales of things like luxury cars and boats and personal aircraft reach an all-time high. And we know that folks in the bottom 50% of earners are getting left even further behind than they were before. So some of the legislation that we're supporting or looking at there are solutions to address that problem. We're looking at, how do we fund our education system in a way that asks some of the wealthiest Vermonters to pay more of their fair share. We're looking at whether we can put some caps in place for companies or limits to state aid for companies where the highest paid worker is making, 10, 20 times more than the lowest paid worker, which looks like someone making $500,000 when the lowest paid worker is making minimum wage. So we're looking at a number of policies. I could go on and on. I mean, there's many racial justice policies we support, climate justice, et cetera.
And as part of that list, would you include perhaps an income tax surcharge on wealthy Vermonters?
Absolutely. So, and some of our Democratic colleagues, in fact, are bringing that legislation forward, and we are joining with them and supporting that.
Senator Polina, what do you see as the top priorities for the Senate Progressive Caucus?
Well, it's a similar response to what Selena said. I would say the most important thing we have to do is make sure that our families and businesses survive this pandemic. And that means taking care of those people most impacted by the pandemic. We have to make sure that we extend unemployment insurance to people who are out of work, We have to deal with people who are falling behind on their rent and their fear of eviction. We have to make sure that we can provide affordable housing for people in need. We have to really think hard about what we're going to do about maintaining the ability of our restaurants and restaurant workers to survive in this economic pandemic. Also, there's a lot of businesses that rely on long-term planning, like event planning, the hospitality industry. And we have to do what we can to make sure those people realize that when, at some point, they're going to be able to reopen. We have to work with them to decide when that's going to be. But we also, as was recently said, we have to work on systemic changes at the same time. It's not just about short-term shoring up people's lives. We have to make sure that we create an economy that's better than normal. We hear people say, when will we go back to normal? You want to go back to someplace that's better than normal, because normal meant that a lot of people couldn't afford food put on the table. Normal meant a lot of people couldn't afford to pay their bills. Normal meant people can't afford to go to college. So we do have to start looking at things like how we change education funding, move it away from poverty towards income to fund our schools, rebuilding or building a child care system that works for folks. It's just, we can't just get stuck on the short term. We have to realize that we have to do long-term thinking as well. The one thing the governor said is that we have to be careful not to put the burden on working Vermonters. But the burden's already on working Vermonters. Working Vermonters are paying more of their income in taxes than wealthier Vermonters are. They're the ones who are struggling and can't afford to send their kids to college. So we have to make sure that we work to shore up people in the short term, but we rebuild systems that are better than the ones we have so that we can actually make Vermont a better place for working families.
Senator Polina, do you agree with the governor that this initial $210 million in federal stimulus money should only be used for one-time projects? And we mentioned some of those projects at the outset of the program, and should not be used, the governor would say, for any ongoing programs in state government. Do you agree with that approach?
Well, I basically do agree with that approach, because I think there's a lot of short-term needs that we need to put that money into. And I think broadband is mentioned often, state colleges is often mentioned. Housing is certainly a great need. But the difference is, I think that we need to do these short-term one-time spending, but we have to also realize that things like fixing the education system funding is not about creating a new system. It's about not about putting more money into the system. It's about creating a new system that actually works better for working people. So I think in the short term, it's okay to do those one-time spending efforts, but I think it should not distract us from the need to actually deal with rising inequality in the state and the need for systemic changes in things like education funding and funding for our state colleges and child care, as well as shoring up our pension systems as well. This is going to be a big challenge.
Let's talk to George, who is calling from South Hero. Hi, George. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. We want to talk about the education issue, if that's okay. First of all, this is going to take a lot of work on the part of the legislature to resolve. But in the meantime, we should separate the program from the existing one to any future employees, both teachers and state employees, and go to a defined defined contribution program right away, just as IBM did and a lot of other agents, private sector people, a lot of governments have done, is just at some point stop the defined benefit and go to defined contribution. I think that if the legislature is interested in solving the problem, they should do that this year. And then they can still work on the defined benefit program, which exists, but at least they'll have more time because they won't be increasing the debt, which they now have, because the defined contribution is money that's paid when it's due, and there's no future layout or requirement for it.
Okay, George, thanks for your phone call. Representative Colburn, do you think, as you look at the state's pension unfunded liability, which is, as we learned from Senator Brock earlier in the program, is somewhere around $5 billion and has increased by $600 million in the last year or two. Do you think that the state should look at people and say, here's a group of people who've already retired and they get certain benefits, but if you're still working for the state, we're going to treat you somewhat differently? Is that a fair approach?
I have some concerns about that approach as a someone who's in a union in an educational setting myself. I think, you know, whenever you split workers like that, it creates issues. But more to the point, I think any of the solutions that we come up with around pensions, we have to do in collaboration and partnership with the unions that represent these folks, so Vermont NEA, VSBA, and really need to be part of collective bargaining process. I have deep respect for that process, and I would not want the legislature or the state to take any action that bypassed that process and the voice of workers in coming up with a fair solution to this challenge.
Would you agree that something rather dramatic needs to take place?
Well, I think that's clear. I mean, it's a big chunk of money, but we also, one of the solutions to could be the kinds of bold proposals that we're talking about to just really look at our values, and I think the teachers, the state employees who have weathered us and our kids through this crisis, we have got to be working hand in hand with them on this issue.
Senator Plana, for years you've been a strong advocate for the Vermont State College system. You're a graduate of that system from Johnson State College when it was known as Johnson State College. You've also been an advocate for making tuition at the state colleges much more affordable, in fact, in some cases, to make it free. Given everything that's happening with the pandemic and the state's economic situation, is this the time to take a close look at that issue?
Yes, it is a good time to take a close look at the issue. I mean, it's an issue that, as a state, we've ignored for a long time, much too long. We have deliberately, consciously, purposely underfunded our state colleges for years, and that's what resulted in the fact that our colleges are too expensive for Vermonters to afford to go to. There are ways in which we can reduce the cost of tuition, which would be good not only for the students and their families, but also for the state's economy and our workforce. I've been working with a group of folks at the state colleges themselves to put together a plan that would change reconfigure the board of trustees of the state colleges to include more faculty and staff and students in decision-making, to do away with the chancellor's office and do away with many of the duplicative high-paid deans and administrators at the state college system, to have one system, streamlined system, that is where the administration is based on one of the campuses. We cut down our costs quite a bit. We can stop sending our need grant money out of state. We're the only state in the country that allows our equivalent of our VSAC grants to be taken out of state. We can keep those in state. We can save $5 to $7 million. So this is the time to do it, because we have to start making investments that not just support our families, but also support the state economy. And I think it's one of those things that we've put off way too long. And if we wait much longer, we're not going to replace the state colleges as it is. But I think that we need to do everything possible to bring people together now. And I think we need to take a hard look at where we can save money in the state college system while at the same time making tuition affordable for Vermont students. And I think we can do that. I think there's a number of proposals on the table that would move us in that direction. But there's nothing more important than making sure that we support our higher education system in the state.
Representative Colburn, you spoke earlier in the program about finding a more equitable way to fund education in Vermont. Recently, there was a tax commission that looked at this issue and recommended that everybody, all homeowners, pay their school taxes based on their income and not the value of their property. Right now, we've got about 75% of Vermonters qualifying for the income sensitivity program. That has an income cap of somewhere around $110,000. And so people under that amount can pay their school taxes based on a percentage of their income. What's the outlook for that bill this year? Do you think it has a chance of being passed?
I don't know about this year, because we're coming up close on our deadline. But I do, we have members in our caucus and members of the Democratic caucus on the House side who are collaborating on a bill that would move forward those recommendations, and they're working with some really good experts to think about how that could work. I know that Senator Paulina has many times introduced legislation on this issue that proposes a little bit more of a hybrid model to perhaps help us phase into income. But I think the recommendations that came forward from the Tax Commission are a huge plus for folks to be able to consider this much more seriously, something progressives have been pushing for a long time. And I think I don't know about passage this year, but I think the outlook for this becoming more of a serious conversation in the legislature has been greatly improved by the recommendations of the Tax Commission.
And Bob, may I mention that when you mentioned income sensitivity, which is the way most Vermonters do pay for their educational funding, but the fact is that even with income sensitivity, low and moderate income people are paying a larger percentage of their income to fund local schools than wealthier people are. So we have to look at redesigning the system so that wealthier people actually pay their fair share. If we think legislatively that it's appropriate for a low and moderate income family to pay 2 or 3% of their income to fund local schools, but at the same time, we know that wealthier people are paying 1% or 0.5% of their income to fund local schools. That's not fair. So we need to deal with the fairness issue as well. And we will be introducing legislation to move us towards income funding for schools, which I think is a long time coming. And I think that this new report, as Selena mentioned, adds a lot of credibility to something that progressives have been supporting for many years.
And Representative Colburn, sort of the second part of that commission report dealt with the sales tax. They proposed expanding the base of the sales tax to include most services and perhaps some food items. And if this is done, the commission said the sales tax rate could be reduced from its current level of 6% down to around 3.5%. What are your thoughts about that approach?
I think it's an interesting approach and one we should look at. I mean, I think, raising sales taxes now is going to be a tricky and touchy issue, although your point that it will have a lowering effect overall is a valuable one. And so it's something we should – I thought the whole – I have to sit down and really spend a lot of time with that report, but many of the recommendations that came forward, including also looking at tax structure as a way of addressing some of our climate justice needs in the state. There are a lot of good recommendations in there, and we need to roll up our sleeves and dig into them. And I hope our finance and ways and means committees are prepared to do that along with the rest of us.
Senator Paulina, I'm wondering your thoughts about raising money for the state through sports betting or the Keno program, expanding the lottery. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's not something that I wholeheartedly would support. I think it's worth talking about, but I think that those kinds of, lottery games and sports betting positions are things that tend to attract lower and moderate income people, and they result in they in fact become something like a regressive tax on lower and moderate income people, and I think we should stay away from them as long as we can. I think there's growing support for sports betting in the state, and I think that's something that we're probably going to take a look at, but it's not a solution to our problems. I mean, what we need to do is look at the tax structure and how we raise money, and there's better ways to raise money than that. I think that keep in mind that the wealthiest 5% of Vermonters this year are saving. They're saving $237 million on the federal income tax. That's the top income 5% of Vermont earners are saving $237 million this year in taxes. We could ask those people to pay their fair share, and we could find other ways to raise revenue for the state rather than go towards betting and lottery systems, which I think tend to prey upon low and moderate income people.
We're almost out of time, but Representative Colburn, what about health care? It's something we haven't heard a lot about during the pandemic. Certainly people's health has been a big issue during the pandemic and people's access to health care. But in terms of the cost of health care, it's been a progressive priority, I think, for some time that the state should really have a universal primary health care system. Is that correct?
That is correct. And my district mate and colleague in the House Progressive Caucus, Brian Chena, has reintroduced that bill for the third time now, and you know, many progressives have signed on. We think that's an important step. We think continuing even to look at what a single payer system for all healthcare would look like is really critical. And one thing I think that's happening this year in the legislature that may push us further into these conversations is that people are really starting to look at the issue of health disparities, the disparate health impacts that BIPOC Vermonters, that LGBTQ plus Vermonters face, that Vermonters who have disabilities face. And so a bill was actually introduced last week in the House Healthcare Committee that aims to really start to address those issues. And I think along the path of that discussion, we have to look at what funding and access to healthcare looks like. But I am encouraged by what seems to be a commitment to deepening the conversations around disparities.
Senator Polina, just got a minute left. I'm wondering, how do you see the Senate Progressive Caucus being effective in the Senate chamber with the number of members that you have? What's the role of the caucus?
Well, the Senate is a very small place that relies a lot on personal contact and trust in order to get things done. And Senate committees are very small. It's interesting sometimes when you're sitting in a Senate committee to realize that there's five of you, usually, five members taking on some of the big issues and shaping those issues before they go to the House floor. So the most important thing you can do is work closely, build good relationships, and work closely with other members of your committee to craft legislation in a way that works for everybody from a progressive point of view whenever possible before it leaves the committee and goes to the Senate floor. So it's possible with a small number of people to influence big legislation because the work really happens in committees in the Senate. And we've been able to build good relationships and make that happen. So it's about being an effective legislator and work building close relationships in committees, which is where the work really gets done.
We've been listening to some of the legislative priorities of the Progressive Party at the State House. Many thanks to our guests, House Caucus Leader Celine Colburn and Senate Caucus Leader Anthony Polina. Many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.